Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Vingan on a Wednesday evening, joined as always by Dick Heaser and this week, my special guest, the one, the only, Robbie Stanley, Robbie at Retro, NHL.com, all the things. Hello, Robbie.
I enjoy being your special guest. Thank you for having me.
You are special. You are indeed special. Unlike this Nashville Predators season, which is anything but special, the Predators lost last night 4-1 to the St. Louis Blues, the third consecutive game in which the Predators have been held to one or fewer goals. If not for a buzzer beater at the end of the second period by Brady Shea, the Predators would have been shut out for the 11th time this season. But the Predators have been held to one or fewer goals 17 times this season, which I was actually surprised, Robbie, to find was nowhere close to the leader in the NHL this season. The Minnesota Wild have been held to one or fewer goals 23 times this season. The Predators just, in quotation marks, just 17 times. But this season from hell rolls on. There's about a month left in it. But it's becoming harder to find reasons for optimism with this group. Not talking about this season, of course. This season is effectively over. But moving forward, you were hoping, Robbie, to see more from this group that would suggest, hey, this season, it stunk. But next season, they'll be right back to where we all thought they would be in the race for the playoffs. But their inability to score, I'm having a hard time coming up with ways to describe it. I feel like I have exhausted all of my big words to describe how mind-boggling this team's offensive ineptitude has been this season.
Well, there's almost nothing positive to point to. I mean, let's just call it what it is. And, you know, offensively, that's certainly the case. You know, defensively, I think there are times where they're just an absolute train wreck out there defensively. And, you know, the goaltending is kind of a separate discussion from all that. But offensively, like, it is pretty amazing. I was talking about this with a couple of guys that cover St. Louis yesterday. A team that has Forsberg, Yossi when he's healthy, obviously, but not right now. Stamkos, Marchessault, O'Reilly. You've got that kind of star power from a name perspective, and you just can't score. Like, it's crazy to me that they're this bad offensively. And you're right. Like, you know, I can speak for myself. I've long since been out of, like, this year mode. Like, what does anything have to do with this season? Like, this season for them has been over for a while. So it's all about now kind of looking ahead to next year. And it's becoming pretty hard to look at this and say, well, this is just a one-year thing and next year they'll be fine. It's hard to get there right now because they're not doing much of anything well. Offensively, I mean, they are working as hard as they can to score like a goal every night. Like, it's crazy how inept they are offensively. So, I mean, that's naturally going to lead to some conversations about the coach and the system and all that. And we'll have plenty of time to get into that throughout the offseason. But there's not a lot to point to right now offensively that makes you feel good about where this thing is headed. And the same problem that has plagued them for a lot of their franchise continues to plague them, and that is their center depth right now is just not good. And when you don't have good center depth, it's hard to score in this league.
We're just waiting for the moment when that little E is next to the Nashville Predators' name in the NHL standings. Only one team so far, the San Jose Sharks, have been mathematically eliminated from playoff contention. But the Predators will probably join them very soon. And one player that I've been watching closely over these past few games is Michael Bunting.
Yep.
Because Barry Trotz, by trading Tommy Novak and Luke Shen for Michael Bunting and a fourth round pick, and then seeing the Penguins flip Luke Shen to the Winnipeg Jets for a second round pick and a fourth round pick, and then Barry Trotz, if I am not mistaken, saying that, hey, I value Michael Bunting like a second-round pick. That puts a lot of pressure on Michael Bunting for Predators fans to prove that, hey, Barry Trotz thinks that Michael Bunting could be part of the solution for this group moving forward. Here is Michael Bunting's stat line through his first three games as a member of the Nashville Predators. He's played three games. He's a -3, and I know plus-minus, it's not the greatest stat, but he's a -3. He has 6 penalty minutes and 4 shots on goal in 3 games. Now, keep in mind, he is just returning from an appendectomy.
Yep.
So keep that in mind. But not an inspiring start for Michael Bunting. And I do think that Barry Trotz inadvertently put a lot of pressure on Michael Bunting. And you wouldn't think that of a player like Michael Bunting at this point of his career. But with the trade that the Predators made that involved Luke Shen, and then seeing Pittsburgh extract more value for Luke Shen, that puts a lot of pressure on Michael Bunting, and so far, it hasn't looked so good.
Well, they need him to click, and they need him to be a part of things next year in terms of a guy that can play on either your second or third line and can give you some scoring punch. Now, as you said, like, it's three games, so I don't know that I'm willing to freak out yet if you're a Predators fan on him. He is coming back from an appendectomy. But there's no doubt the three games haven't been good. I mean, he's kind of been right in line with the rest of the team of, you know, the penalty minutes, you know, having 6 in 3 games, 3 minor penalties. That's not what you're looking for. And he's a guy that, you know, just a year ago between, I guess it was Carolina and Pittsburgh last year, he put up 55 points, 19 goals, 36 assists. Now, he played with Austin Matthews back in the 21-22 season, and he scored 23 goals, had 63 points. Is he going to do that again? My guess is probably not. Like, he's probably not going to have that type of year offensively. But, like, if he flirted with 50 points next year, I think you'd take that if you're the Predators. The problem is, like, right now, they just seem so disjointed out there. And the question is, like, can they find a role for him and a combination with him where he fits the rest of the year here? Like, I personally think it would be a mistake, Adam, to approach next season and count him like he's going to be in part of the top 6. Like, I don't think he needs to be in the part of the top 6. I think he's probably perfectly suited for a third line guy. If you want to put him on like the second power play unit, and he's, you know, pretty hard nosed guy, goes to the front of net, all those things. But, like, more than anything, Barry Trotz needs a move to work. He's on a run right now of moves that are just not working out very well. It's been a bad year for Barry Trotz. And if you factor in Bunting, you know, let's say he doesn't work out for them as they go through the rest of this season and into next year, like, you start to look around and say, and throw your hands up a little bit and say, what's he doing? Like, what's Barry Trotz doing around here? So, like, more than anything right now, like, Trotz needs a move to work out well for him. It's been a while since he's had one.
It reminds me a little bit of that run that David Poile had. He trades a first-round pick for Ryan Hartman.
Yep.
He makes the deal for Kyle Turris. There were moves there for a little while that, I mean, you could even throw trading Kevin Fiala for Mikhail Granlund, where David Poile was coming up on the wrong end of deals. And he had a good run at the end when he made all of those trades at the deadline a couple of years ago, namely the Tanner Jeannot deal, where he acquired what felt like 50 draft picks for a player who was not even on the team that traded for him anymore. But you're right. Barry Trotz, it has not been a great year for Barry Trotz. And I was reading Chris Johnston's mailbag on The Athletic yesterday. And a reader asked, what's the plan in Nashville this offseason to get this team back on the rails? And I thought that buried in this response was a really interesting nugget from Chris Johnston, who is one of The Athletic's NHL insiders. He writes, quote, while there doesn't appear to be a full-scale rebuild on the horizon, Trotz is going to be pursuing forward-thinking moves this summer that may result in a team that doesn't win as much next season. That stood out to me.
Yeah.
Because Trotz has talked about getting this team back on the rails, as the reader wrote in the question, and having this team win games next season. So this idea that he may be pursuing forward-thinking moves that may result in a team that doesn't win as much next season, what does that look like? What does that mean?
Well, I don't know. Like, he has been kind of talking in that regard with Jared with his weekly visits in terms of, like, the plan is the plan, and maybe there's going to be some pain going through that. I think we all kind of thought that would be last year, and it wasn't. And it's turned out to be this year when that didn't look in the offseason like that's going to be the way it goes. I guess my response to that would be, like, if I'm, you know, he's also talked about how he's met with Steven Stamkos and he's met with the veteran players in this group and talked about and laid out his vision moving forward, right? And he talked about basically, hey, here's what I'm planning on doing. If you've got a problem with it and you don't want to be here, let me know. And as he's talked about, no, they've all said, we're in. Like, we want to be a part of the solution. So I guess it's hard for me to grasp, Adam, those two things coexisting. It's difficult for me to grasp that he's approached these veteran players with a plan that maybe doesn't involve trying to be as competitive as possible next year and then being okay with that. Like, I those two things just don't add up to me. So I don't know what the disconnect is there. You know, maybe are you trying to do both? And we talk about trying to thread that needle all the time in pro sports. I just think that's a really difficult thing to do. Like, some franchises, whether it's the NFL, the NHL, whoever, they're able to do it. And you can thread that needle of kind of retooling on the fly while continuing to remain competitive. Largely, I think that's a really difficult thing to do. So I think this roster is in a tough spot from that standpoint. And again, as we've talked about, they got so many veteran guys under contract that I don't think are going anywhere, that you're almost forced to try to be as competitive as possible, given your contractual situation.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, The Athletic unveils its 10 biggest disappointments of this NHL season. There are a lot of Predators players who could end up on this list, but we will talk about the player who did end up on this list. Coming up next, Adam Mingan with Robbie Stanley this week on Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Mingan joined by Robbie Stanley this week. The Predators homestand continues tomorrow against the Anaheim Ducks, followed by a Hockey Night in Canada matchup on Saturday at home against the Toronto Maple Leafs. But Robbie, yesterday the Athletic published its list of the NHL's 10 biggest disappointments of 2024. 2025. And as I said before the break, there are countless players on the Nashville Predators who could be on this list. But the Athletic singled out one in particular, Brady Shea. Brady Shea landed on this list. The Athletic writes, quote, after the Preds traded Ryan McDonagh back to the Tampa Bay Lightning, GM Barry Trotz vowed to his players that he'd find a high-end top-four defenseman to make up for the loss of McDonagh. Trotz delivered on that promise, signing Brady Shea to a 7-year, $49 million contract in free agency. Shea spent a large chunk of the first 20 games or so alongside Roman Josi. It looked like a tantalizing combination on paper, especially given the elite top-pair results teams like Colorado, Vancouver, and Dallas have gotten when pairing their top two best defensemen. Let me rephrase that. When pairing, they're two best offensive defensemen. In reality, Shea and Josi got torched defensively, and the experiment was scrapped. It continues, quote, Nashville has been outshot, outchanced, and outscored by 17 goals during Shea's 5-on-5 shifts. This was before the game last night. He's been far leakier defensively than he was with the Hurricanes, and he's on pace for just 30 points offensively, which represents a significant dip compared to his last three seasons. Environment, teammate quality, and systems can drastically influence a defenseman's performance. In Shea's case, the Hurricanes' favorable environment likely propped up his perceived value to a certain extent. So Brady Shea lands on this list as one of the 10 biggest disappointments of this NHL season. And the article touches on, as I just read, a lot of things that we've talked about all season and even before the season started. One of the biggest questions I had about Brady Shea was how much of his success was a product of the Hurricanes' environment. And so far, it certainly seems like it played a big part. The other portion of this is consider the defensive partners that Brady Shea has had. He has spent more time with Nick Blankenberg than any other defenseman on the Predators. Nick Blankenberg has played how many games this season? A lot more than I anticipated.
I think 45.
Nick Blankenberg has played 45 games this season, which is roughly 44 more than I expected at the start of the season.
Yep.
So you do have to keep that in mind as well. But we spend so much time talking about Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault that I feel sometimes that Brady Shea, he gets shuffled off to the side, despite the fact that he signed the longest contract of the three in free agency. And when you look at this team's defensive play this season, as you said, Robbie, it's been a mess. And Brady Shea has played a part in that. My question to you is, how confident are you that he can figure it out and be a part of the solution moving forward and look like the defenseman the Predators thought they were getting when they signed him in free agency?
Well, I'm not that confident from the standpoint of, and this is kind of, I think he is right in line with my general view on the team right now, which is, and I think this is also kind of getting into the coaching staff part of this too. Like at some point along the way here, there needs to have been a demonstration that you can fix it, right? Like we're 65 games into the season. And really at no point, in my opinion, has Brady Shea really looked all that comfortable. He's had a couple games here and there where he's played well. It's not like he's just been a total disaster every single night, but it's been largely bad. And he's the one, I think, to me, that is the most concerning from a couple of different standpoints. Number one, like Stamkos is 35, right? So you could expect that he was probably going to have some drop-off to some degree in terms of his offensive production. Now, admittedly, the drop-off from him has been way bigger than I thought it would be in year number one. Is there a chance that Stamkos in a new system with a new way of doing things next year, maybe with some new pieces around him, can bounce back and maybe not score 40 like he did last year in Tampa, but could he get back closer to the 30-goal mark? Yeah, I think he can. I think that's something that can happen. You know, Marchessault is a little different because he had never really even approached 40 goals before last year, and he just kind of got hot last year, and that's what it was. But if Marchessault on a yearly basis for the next couple years gives you 25 to 30 goals, I think you're probably cool with that if you're the Predators. Shea is not in his mid-30s. He's 30 years old, and he's a guy that got a 7-year deal that needs to be a pillar on your back end moving forward. And right now, he's been a liability. And a couple parts of that concern me. Number one, you know, we'll see if this is a trend heading into next year or if this is just right in line with the rest of the team. But Roman Josi is in his mid-30s now and is presumably, I know they've called it upper body, but, you know, judging by the conversation around it, he's presumably dealing with another concussion. He's had multiple concussions throughout his career. So I do think it's fair to wonder, are the days of Roman Josi being an elite defenseman gone? Are those days behind us? I would say the answer to that is probably yes. Now, that doesn't mean that he can't be a really good defenseman, but the days of him competing for a Norris Trophy might be gone. So you have to factor that in. All right, is there anybody coming behind him that can help offset that? Well, that's supposed to be Brady Shea. Like, Brady Shea is your high-paid guy on defense. He's supposed to be a guy that, you know, takes care of business in the defensive zone and can chip in offensively. He's been largely a disaster this year in the defensive zone. So you factor in those two things, and then right now their defense core beyond those two is in such disarray as to what that's going to look like next year that as much as we're concerned about the offense, I think the defensive side of things might be my biggest concern for this group as they move forward. I feel like they've got so much work to do on their defensive side of things, and that's beyond just Brady Shea needing to get better, that they're a long way away from being a good defensive team.
Let's just take a moment to look at the starting defense for the Predators last night against the St. Louis Blues. You had Brady Shea on the top pair with Nick Blankenberg. You had Mark Delgaiso with Spencer Stastny on the second pair, and Andreas Englund with Justin Barron on the third pair. That is a preseason defense corps, if I've ever seen one.
I'm not sure any of those guys outside of Brady Shea is an actual NHL defenseman.
That is a fair argument to make. So Shea spent some time with Luke Shen. Luke Shen is gone. He spent some time with Roman Josi. Roman Josi is injured, and that experiment, as it said in the article by The Athletic, it failed. The question is, what kind of defenseman do the Predators need to pursue to help Brady Shea?
Yeah.
When he was in Carolina, he was attached at the hip to Brett Pesce.
Yep.
And Brett Pesce was the perfect partner for Brady Shea. Brett Pesce is a simple defenseman in the sense that the plays that he makes don't wow you. He's not going to light up the score sheet, but he plays a straightforward game, compliments a defenseman like Brady Shea well, who likes to take some charge in the offensive zone. I haven't scoured the free agent market for defense, but the Predators do not seem to have a partner for Brady Shea right now that complements his game. That can change in the offseason, but to me, that is something that absolutely needs to be rectified next season. Because with no disrespect to Nick Blankenberg, I don't think Nick Blankenberg should be playing anywhere close to the minutes that Nick Blankenberg has been playing this season.
I totally agree with you, and I think that's something that they've got to look at. The problem is they also need to find somebody who can play with Roman Josi. They really have not had anybody on a consistent basis that's been able to play with him and be a consistent pairing with him, basically since Ryan Ellis left. Like, he's basically been a revolving, it's been Favreau for a while.
Carrier.
He played with Carrier for a while. He played with Luke Shen.
McDonough.
It's basically been a revolving door of defensemen who have played with Josi basically ever since Ryan Ellis left. So, I think there's two needs that they've got there. And people are going to say, well, Tanner Molendijk can do it. Well, Tanner Molendijk may eventually be able to do it. I don't know if Tanner Molendijk, number one, is going to make the team next year. And number two, if he does, is he ready to play with Roman Josi? Is he ready to play with Brady Shea? Like, are those the right decisions for him in his development? I don't know. So I'm with you. Like, they got to find somebody that plays with Brady Shea. The problem is they also got to find somebody the plays with Roman Josi, and you were hoping that it could be those two together. And I think so far, when they've been on the ice together, the answer is that they are not a good match with each other.
You're right about the defense. It's something that the Predators, for much of their history, haven't had to worry about. We've had countless conversations over the years about how deep this defense is. There was a time that Seth Jones was a third-pairing defenseman for the Nashville Predators.
Yep.
That's how deep this Predators defense corps was. And if you are a fan of this team made its name on churning out high-quality defensemen. And right now, they're in a bit of a rut with that. But Brady Shea is going to have to be part of this team's solution. As you said, Robbie, he is one of many veteran players signed to long-term contracts with either modified no-trade clauses or no-movement clauses. So Brady Shea's here, unless he decides, hey, I want out. But who's to say that's going to happen? But it's an interesting spot for this team to be in, considering, historically, this has been the strength of this organization. And right now, it's a glaring weakness. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, The Athletic published something else earlier this week that caught my eye. We'll discuss that next. Adam Bingen in with Robbie Stanley this week. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Bingen in with Robbie Stanley this week. We were talking about one article from The Athletic about the NHL's biggest disappointments of the season. Let's switch gears to another Athletic article that was published on Monday. NHL owner rankings. I found this to be fascinating, Robbie. Several months ago, The Athletic put out a call to its NHL readers to evaluate their team's owners. Nearly 4,000 of you, meaning readers of The Athletic, including representatives from all 32 NHL fan bases, filled out The Athletic's detailed owner survey, and the results are fascinating. The Athletic writes, quote, "We've compiled your answers in four key ownership categories: willingness to spend, organizational stability, treatment of the fan base, and franchise vision, into a fan score, and combine that with The Athletic's own ranking that factors in objective things such as team performance in the regular season and playoffs over the past decade, as well as ownership's general reputation influence, according to The Athletic's reporting." The Predators came in right in the middle of the pack. They were 16th out of 32 teams. Predators Holding LLC. Here is the fan base evaluation. Willingness to spend, ranked 9th in the NHL. Organizational stability, ranked 16th in the NHL. Treatment of the fan base, also ranked 16th in the NHL. Franchise vision, ranked 28th in the NHL. This is what The Athletic wrote about the Predators. Quote, "The Predators are owned by a large group of more than a dozen, mostly local owners. Stakes within that ownership group have evolved over the years, so they've at times lacked a visible face of the organization since Craig Leopold sold the franchise to take over the Wild. Former Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam is set to take over majority ownership later this summer, which may change that. Nashville had the fewest fans complete our ownership survey by a fairly large margin, a sign of some apathy on the subject. Those who did weigh in, however, put the Predators solidly middle of the pack in most categories. They did rank 28th in franchise vision during what's become a very tough season on the ice." One fan wrote, quote, "Owner or owners are invisible. No idea who is in or out of the ownership group. No vision about the franchise shared. The only thing I can surmise is they like booze because you can't walk more than 10 feet in the concourses without stumbling into a beer or liquor stand. But then again, that's the whole city and really the whole league. If you've ever been to arena, that's liquor everywhere. Yes. No vision about the franchise shared." Again, the Predators ranked 28th in franchise vision. And Robbie, as you know, near the end of my time covering this team on a daily basis, I was on a bit of a crusade about ownership and the fact that ownership needed to speak to the issues that this franchise was having on the ice. As we know, Sean Henry serves as the conduit between the ownership group and the fans. Now, the Bill Haslam aspect of this is interesting because Bill Haslam has plenty of experience being a front-facing person, of course, being the governor of the state. And I'm curious how that will change how ownership presents itself once he becomes the majority owner. But your thoughts generally on where the Predators fall in these NHL owner rankings?
Yeah, it's not overly surprising. I think the vision for the franchise thing is exactly in line of most of the frustration that I get on social media from Predators fans, which is, okay, what are we doing? Like, are you tearing this thing down? Are you trying to go for it and win? Because it kind of feels like you're trying to do a little bit of both, and we don't like that. Pick a direction. So that part of it doesn't really surprise me. You know, everything else, it is going to be interesting to see what's different in terms of the connection from ownership to the fan base when Bill Haslam takes over. Now, Bill Haslam has not taken over yet as majority owner, as that article mentioned, it's happening later this summer. But for all intents and purposes, he has basically stepped into that role lately. So it's not been official, but he has been heavily involved in everything that they're doing. So is that going to change from the standpoint of, like, is Bill Haslam going to be holding like a monthly press conference with the media? I doubt it. Are we going to hear from Bill Haslam more than we did from maybe Herb Fritsch or some of the other faces of the ownership group? Maybe. Like, we heard from Bill Haslam when it was announced he was joining the ownership group and eventually taking over. Basically, since then, though, like, it's been Sean Henry speaking on behalf of Bill Haslam. So, I don't know. I don't know if I get the sense that that's going to change all that much. What's going to be interesting to me on the ownership front is the Predators, throughout the history of their franchise, have been unbelievably patient when it comes to general manager, when it comes to head coaches. I mean, Andrew Burnett is the fourth head coach in the history of the franchise, and they're in their 26th year. Barry Trotz is the second general manager in the history of the franchise. It's been an incredibly patient franchise with their front office. And there's been some success that's come along with that. And as multiple people have pointed out, also, when you're looking at the grand scheme of things and you're trying to compete for a championship, they've been past the second round of the playoffs one time in their existence. So obviously that part of it's got to change as they move forward. I think the most interesting question to me when Bill Haslam officially takes over is, what is that going to look like? Is the patience going to be a little bit less with him? Like, is he quicker on the trigger to make changes if he feels like that's necessary? Like, you tell me, Adam, it almost felt like with David Poyle and Herb Fritsch that David Poyle could do whatever and they were never going to move on from David Poyle. That's what it felt like.
It reminds me of something that I wrote in a story a couple of years ago that I patted myself on the back for, which I don't normally do when I write. But what I remember as I sat down to write, I said, oh boy, this is good. I said that David Poyle has the job security of a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
That is what it felt like at the end of David Poyle's tenure, that they were going to allow David Poyle to be the general manager until he decided he didn't want to be the general manager anymore, which is, on the surface, what happened. He wanted to retire. He had a big say in bringing in Barry Trotz to be his successor. He gave Barry Trotz a crash course in what it takes to be a GM. So that is an interesting aspect of it. I do think that, especially now, when teams are winning, fans don't care about ownership.
Exactly.
We have talked about this with the Tennessee Titans on our respective programs during the week. When the Titans were winning, Amy Adams Strunk could do no wrong. She could shake hands and kiss babies, and that was enough.
She's like everybody's mom.
Right. But then the team started losing. She fired John Robinson in the middle of a season. They lost every game from that point on.
Yeah.
And we know where the Tennessee Titans are now. And now everybody wants to hear from Amy Adams Strunk. And everybody wants to question whether or not she is a good owner. So winning is the ultimate factor in whether an owner is, by most accounts, a good owner
yep.
or a bad owner. So the current ownership group does not want to be in public.
Front-facing.
Yep. Front-facing, yes. They're not hiding from us. But Herb Fritsch is not a public speaker.
Right.
Herb Fritsch does not want to answer questions about the franchise. He wants to own the franchise, and he wants to put the franchise in the hands of Sean Henry and Barry Trotz. So I am curious about how Bill Haslam could change that. Will we hear from him more often? Will he decide that patience isn't as much of a virtue as it has been for this organization? Because you're right, Robbie. Despite the fact that this season has been an unmitigated disaster, this team has been a competitive playoff team for much of its history.
Yeah.
But at the same time, again, as you mentioned, outside of the magical 2017 run we all look back to, they have not had that much postseason success in terms of advancing past the first round.
Another thing that's interesting about this, and Some of this, I think, is probably just pure coincidence. Some of this is the fact that these teams have been winning, but this is also going to continue to be a conversation, I think, moving forward here. You know, there's all this talk around the league of the teams that are in tax-free states, right? So you've got, you know, the no income tax in Tennessee and Texas and Florida and Nevada, and then in Washington State with Seattle in there. I mean, the top four teams on this list for ownership, Tampa Bay's at one, Florida's at two, Vegas is at three, Dallas is at four. Now, I know in the case of the first three, they've all recently won Stanley Cups, so that has to factor into this. And Dallas has not won a Stanley Cup during that time period, but they've been knocking on the door for the last few years. They've been to two consecutive Western Conference Finals. They went to the Cup Final back in 2020, and they've got a team this year where they might be right back in the thick of it again. So there's a lot of winning that those teams have done, but it is interesting to me that, you know, those teams that really make no secret about it and kind of tout that advantage that they've got and being aggressive and kind of being ruthless and going out and trying to take advantage of the no state tax thing and using that as, you know, destination places to play. You got four of those right off the hop to begin this thing. And the Predators, you know, Elliot Friedman's talked about this. The Predators should be one of those teams. And you've got them in the middle of the pack. It's just interesting to monitor that part of it.
Right. If the Predators start winning again, the ownership group will move up these rankings.
There's no doubt.
That those two things go hand in hand. But I am fascinated by how things could change when Bill Haslam officially becomes the majority stakeholder in the Predators. I'm wondering, as I said, if the patience that this organization has had with its coaches and GMs changes when a new owner comes in, or if Bill Haslam, much like Herb Fritch before him, just says, hey, I trust Barry Trotz, I trust John Henry, you two handle it,
yep,
and I'll be here. So that is something that will be interesting to monitor once that shift in ownership comes to fruition. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, there is one thing that's happened over the past week or so that I want to address, and I will admit I've had a part in it, but I just want some of you to take a chill pill, and we'll discuss that next. Adam Vingan in with Robbie Stanley this week. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan in with Robbie Stanley this week. The Predators return to action tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena against the Anaheim Ducks, followed by a Saturday matchup on Hockey Night in Canada against the Toronto Maple Leafs before heading on the road for two games, Sunday in St. Louis and Tuesday in Raleigh against the Carolina Hurricanes. Speaking of the Carolina Hurricanes, Robbie Stanley, one of the moves that the Predators made at the trade deadline, they traded Mark Jankowski to the Carolina Hurricanes, I want to say for a fifth-round draft pick. Keyser confirms, a fifth-round draft pick. And as I'm scrolling X, Twitter, whatever the hell it's called these days, over the weekend, I see the NHL tweet out, another two-goal game! Mark Jankowski has his fourth goal with the Hurricanes. And I looked it up. Mark Jankowski, multi-goal games for Nashville, 0 in 123 games. Mark Jankowski, multi-goal games for Carolina, 2 in 4 games. I later learned that Mark Jankowski was the first player on record. So I believe the NHL has been tracking shots on goal since 1997. Mark Jankowski is the first player on record to score on each of his first four shots with a new team. And lo and behold, and I admit, that tweet I just read, that was from me. I knew I was poking the bear a little bit. But I saw a lot of, look at what Mark Jankowski's doing now that he's not on the Predators. Again, Mark Jankowski, first player on record to score on each of his first four shots with a new team.
Yep.
What are the odds of that happening? So I know it's easy to see that and say, well, it was Andrew Burnett holding Mark Jankowski back. Let's get real, okay? He's having a great run. It has nothing to do with the Predators.
No, I mean, look, sometimes, especially when you're talking about a two-game sample size, I mean, look, guys, I saw Eric Nystrom score 4 goals in a game against Calgary one time, okay? You know, sometimes weird things just happen in the sport of hockey. It's weird. It's cool for him. Like, I'm happy for Jankowski that he's had immediate success there. But, like, if you think that Jankowski is going to, like, ride into the playoffs basically becoming, you know, Mikko Rantanen light, it's probably not going to happen in Carolina. I think he's a useful player. And look, clearly, like, you know, Carolina, I think, is in a much better position right now than the Predators in terms of the way they play their team game to maybe sustain a little bit more offense, right? Like, you know, Brendan Moore's, I think, a really good coach. And, you know, I do think there's a lot of talking around here about why are all these players leaving and then having success elsewhere, right? And the examples they'll bring up will be Tolvanen in Seattle or Philip Tomasino in Pittsburgh. And I always find these conversations interesting. Like, I'm not saying that the Predators, this year's version of the Predators, could not use an Ellie Tolvanen or a Philip Tomasino, because quite frankly, this year's version of the Predators could use almost anybody that has a chance of putting the puck in the back of the net. But you're talking about Philip Tomasino has 19 points in Pittsburgh, and some people act like they traded away Evgeny Malkin in his prime. Like, Ellie Tolvanen has turned into basically a nice third-line type of guy in Seattle who has a great shot and could put the puck in the net on the power play. Could you use that? For sure. And I think it's probably more painful that you lost those guys for basically nothing. But I think sometimes, like, the exaggeration of guys, like, leaving here and then going on to have, like, Hall of Fame careers elsewhere is a little bit exaggerated. So it's a long way of me saying, like, I wouldn't freak out yet that Mark Jankowski is going to turn into Wayne Gretzky in Carolina.
The other one I've seen recently, Cody Glass. Cody Glass was traded from Pittsburgh to New Jersey. Cody Glass has 5 points in his first 5 games for the Devils, 2 goals, 3 assists.
Yeah.
There was a team in between, guys. He went from Nashville to Pittsburgh to New Jersey.
Right.
And by the way, in Pittsburgh, he had 4 goals and 15 points in 51 games.
Yeah.
So rest on the look at what Cody Glass is doing. He couldn't do that with the Predators. Well, to be fair, Cody Glass really couldn't do that with anybody.
Well, look, to be fair, like, I don't want to exonerate the Predators. Like, they've got a lot of issues they need to figure out here, clearly. And, you know, who knows? Maybe Philip Tomasino in Pittsburgh is going to turn into, like, some perennial 25-goal guy. I have no idea. We'll see what happens on that front. But I guess my point is, they got a whole lot bigger issues with their franchise to figure out right now than, like, being worried about losing Mark Jankowski and Philip Tomasino. That's my point.
Right. And those players had decent success with the Predators.
Yeah, they're okay.
But did anybody really miss Philip Tomasino after he was gone? I know that he had a hot start, if I recall correctly, with the Penguins. That tends to happen when you go to a new team. You get a new lease on life. You want to impress your new teammates.
Kyle Turris looked great here for 17 games.
Exactly. I mean, Kyle Turris could not be stopped at the beginning of his Predators career, and we saw how that turned out. So I know it's easy to see Mark Jankowski scoring on every shot he's taking with the Carolina Hurricanes and find a way to pin that on Andrew Burnett and Barry Trotz. But relax, it's not going to last. Mark Jankowski will turn back into a pumpkin. He's a fine player. He's a good role player.
He is.
He did not suddenly turn into Alex Ovechkin.
No.
So although it's easy to see that success and then use it to bash the Predators for all of the crap that they've been doing this season, It's a little unfair, is what I'm saying. So, Robbie, 2 more games on this homestand. The Anaheim Ducks, you know, yeah. The Maple Leafs game, that interests me. I'm always fascinated when the Maple Leafs come to town. There's a lot going on around the Maple Leafs. They're struggling a little bit. There are always questions about Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and what they're going to do in the playoffs. So Hockey Night in Canada, always a good time when it comes to Nashville.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be, it's always interesting when the circus comes to town. And frankly, we've not really had the two biggest circuses so far this year, which is Toronto and Montreal. They're both coming up in the last month here. So it's always, it's hilarious kind of walking in the locker room sometimes when the Canadian media is here and it's like, wow, there's like 40 people in here. And all the players are looking around like, good Lord, what's going on around here? So it'll be fun to see that on Saturday. There's always like some built-in pressure that comes with Toronto. And look, like anytime, like if they lose to the Predators, it'll be viewed as an abject disaster up there. So the overreaction to every shift in every game, particularly in that market in Toronto, is always hilarious to watch. So we'll see if the Predators can give them a game on Saturday.
Robbie, as always, my friend, a pleasure to have you on Preds Insiders. You can catch Robbie from 6 to 9 a.m. every weekday on Robbie and Rex Road. That'll do it for Preds Insiders this week. The Predators are back in action tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena against the Anaheim Ducks, Saturday at home against the Toronto Maple Leafs. For Robbie Stanley and Nick Kieser, I'm Adam Vingan. This is Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.